The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. You don't have to live in Ontario to recognize what's happening to the environment here right now. This is nothing new in Canada or around the world. You know the drill. A new government that's campaigned on the economy or jobs or tax cuts steps into office, and regulations designed to protect the environment are often the first thing to go.
We're going to put a platform that's going to respect the taxpayers. We're going to put money back in the taxpayers' pocket.
What is unique to Ontario, however, or at least was unique, is that the environment in Ontario has a voice in the halls of power. For the past 25 years, the Office of the Environmental Commissioner has reported to the legislature, answered to the public, and spoken for the province's animals and trees. In December, the independence of that office was eliminated with a single line in a larger bill. Why? In Ontario and in so many other places, are we casting off the rules we've put in place to govern the environment at a time when research shows we need them more than ever? What does that say about our state of mind as we enter the most critical year in history when it comes to combating climate change? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
Ontario is heading down a path that is very uncertain. We don't know what's going to happen a year from now.
Fatima Syed is an investigative reporter with the National Observer who has been digging into the huge impact this little line item is going to have on the health of nature in this province. Let's start with you telling me about the moment that you learned the provincial government was neutering the Office of the Environment Commissioner.
So the government released its fall economic statement, which is kind of like a mini budget statement, so a rough outline of what they're going to do in the months to come when it comes to sort of their investment into Ontario. And there was one line in that, I think it was 57 pages, one line in that 50-something booklet. And it was very technical, so we had to ask about it. But it said that the government is eliminating all 3 out of 9 watchdogs in Ontario. And the three of them were the child advocacy, the Francophone Affairs watchdog, and the environmental watchdog. This news comes just a week and a bit after the environmental watchdog, who is Diane Sachs, and who's been in that position for almost 3 years now, 3 out of 5 years of her tenure. She releases her annual climate report.
Right.
And in that, she reveals that there is over 11,000 tons of sewage in our water systems. So I look at this and I'm like, I'm sorry, what? It was completely shocking because, you know, government comes in, they remove cap and trade, they start talking about, you know, removing all these environmental protections. They release a climate plan that barely has anything in it. And then this was sort of the final full stop in that mandate that we're going to remove the environmental watchdog.
Right. So explain, let's rewind just a little bit. So you can explain to me, what is the environmental watchdog? What does Diane Sachs do?
So Diane Sachs is an independent officer of the legislature. So her job is to keep an eye on the government when it comes to their environmental policy. So she's the woman who's looking at all the decisions they're making. She is the voice for the people and for Ontario's environment. So let's do a hypothetical example. So you live in a rural town in Ontario next to a lake shore, and you see some weird things in the water that look like it's damaging the water. That waterway, you know, is entering your tap system and you're going to drink it. You're concerned. So who do you go to? Diane Sachs is your person.
Okay.
You would go to her. You would say, hey, this is what's happening in my backyard. How do I approach it? Diane Sachs will walk you through it. She'll say, okay, submit a proposal, like write your concerns up and send it to the ministry. And then she will make sure that the ministry responds within the mandated 60 days that it needs to respond, depending on how serious that concern is. So without her, there's no one sort of, you know, following up and making sure that the Ministry of Environment and the Ministry of Natural Resources are actually doing their due diligence by Ontario's environment.
So give me a couple of non-hypothetical examples then. Like historically, what has this office actually done and stepped in on?
So Diane Sachs' predecessor, Gord Miller, who was in the position for 10 years, he talks about how when he entered that office, there was no policy to protect endangered species in Ontario. The list of protected species in Ontario at that time was a dozen long, whereas worldwide, there were 150 species that were under risk. And Gord Miller received tons of messages about this from people across the province saying that, you know, there are turtles in my backyard that are rare. There are bird species. There's this and that. And he took it to the ministry and say, hey, what are you doing about it? A couple of years later, the Minister of Natural Resources at a conference is asked about it. And he says, yeah, we don't have an endangered species at risk policy and we should work on that. And now Ontario has one. Cases like the Grassy Narrows, which is a First Nations community in Ontario that suffered from years-long mercury poisoning because the water was just unprotected, is an issue that our environmental commissioners have kept an eye on and pushed the ministry on to address, and they finally addressed it, or at least started to address it. Without these watchdogs, we really have no one who can look at the province and say, who is doing something about the trees? Who is doing something about our waterways? Who is doing something about the land? In an age where climate change is having a serious impact on our day-to-day lives, we need a watchdog to hold our governments to account and someone we can go to say, hey, there's something wrong in my backyard.
Tell me about the moment that Ontario's Environment Commissioner realized she no longer had a job.
So there's two facets to this. The first time was when the bill was proposed. This was in mid to late November, when the bill was first proposed. Diane Sachs was in Peterborough visiting a community, talking about her climate report. She got a call from a CBC reporter. And that was the first time she'd heard about that her job might not exist anymore. 2018 was the 25th anniversary of her office's existence and the role they had played. To mark that anniversary, the government decided to cut her office entirely, which to her was devastating.
Right.
And to many people who follow the environmental commissioner's office was completely outrageous. The second time was when I was interviewing her on December 6th. It was a very cold afternoon. I remember because we took her outside to take a photo shoot. We were opposite Queen's Park. And I said, you know what's happening in there right now? And she said, yeah. And she's like, and I asked her, I'm like, do you know what the outcome's going to be? She's like, yeah, but we'll talk about it later. We spent over an hour together. And I remember at the end of the interview, a staff member of our office walked in. He sighed and said, well, Bill 57 passed with royal assent. And she was looking down at her desk, and without looking up, she said, good to know they don't want to consult the people. And I remember just, there was no fanfare. There was no phone call from the Minister of Environment. There was no email. There was no official letter. There was no knock on the door. You know, there was no scheduled meeting to say goodbye or, you know, nothing planned. There was no official communication, and it was just axed. It was a line in a bill.
Up next.
Severe weather is here. We even had forest fires, and maybe not on the scale that BC did, but we had forest fires, and you can bet your bottom dollar that's going to happen again.
There's a trader in all of us. Direct invest with Scotia iTrade. Become a new client, and you could get up to $1,500 cash or 300 free trades when you open and fund a new account. Conditions apply. See ScotiaiTrade.com for details. What is the alternative that Ontario's government is proposing?
So according to this omnibus bill, which includes these changes, the government is saying that they're going to police themselves. So they're saying that we're removing the watchdog to save some money, to reduce some red tape, which is all inaccurate, by the way. We still don't know how much money they're going to save by removing this watchdog. And the environmental watchdog really isn't red tape.
Because they can't actually enact any policy, right?
They can't enact policy. They can't actually take any action other than force recommendations and release reports and keep an eye on things.
And put things in the public eye.
And be that liaison between public and government. So now the question is, do we trust this government to protect the environment around us? Do we think they can do a good job? Can we trust that they are going to take action against climate change and protect our next generation and the generation after that? You know, both Gord Miller and Diane Sachs used Titanic metaphors when they talked to me about the Minister of Environment's climate plan, which is not very reassuring.
No.
Do you know the Titanic meme where the ship is just upright in the water and the guy at the top says, what do you mean the sea levels are rising? It looks fine from up here.
Oh, great.
And that's the metaphor Gord Miller used.
Okay.
And Diane Sachs said that the climate plan is like rearranging the furniture on the docks of the ship.
Which is not an uncommon analogy when it comes to our climate policies around the world these days.
Not at all. But Ontario was in a unique position in that it was a leader, you know? We had a cap and trade program that was going to raise billions and keep pollution in check. We had an environmental watchdog, which not many countries have, you know? And this was a unique legislated officer who was raising awareness about environmental problems at a time when they're becoming increasingly complex and hard to understand, but also keeping the government in check. Diane Sachs was a very critical voice and when it came to these issues. And she was very strong and in saying that you're not doing enough.
And you asked the government why they were removing her.
They didn't really answer.
What is traditionally, if Diane Sachs and other commissioners have been the people tasked with speaking out, that can't be a friendly relationship no matter who is in Queen's Park. What is traditionally the ties between the commissioner and the governing party?
I have spoken to two environmental commissioners now. One of them served for 10 years under four different governments.
Right.
Conservative and Liberal. The other one has served for 3 years under two different governments. Gord Miller said this is unprecedented. So he said that under his tenure, he had full access and everyone respected his role and his ability to be critical of the government's action or inaction when it comes to climate mm-hmm. and environment. Diane Sachs didn't have a problem with the Liberal government. It's only when this new government, this new Conservative government has come in that there has been tension because there has been a difference of perspectives when it comes to how to deal with the environment. I don't know what that means moving forward. That's the thing. We're bogged down in policy because that's what created the situation that we're in.
Right.
But at the end of the day, Ontario is heading down a path that is very uncertain. We don't know what's going to happen a year from now. We don't know what our environment's going to look like. We don't know what climate change is going to look like. And we don't know whether whatever the government has proposed in their climate plan and this lack of an environmental watchdog, what kind of effect that will have from a year on.
How did we end up going backwards on this?
I have no idea.
It's not just us. It seems like a lot of places in the face of worse and worse evidence of climate change are just moving backwards.
There is definitely a global movement of neoconservative ideology that seems to be anti-environment for whatever reason, or at least it's not pro-environment. The Doug Ford government says that it's saving money by making all these policies. But in the long run, our forests are going to burn. We saw forest fires in Ontario last summer. That is bound to happen again, according to every single scientist. Our forests are going to burn. That's going to cost us money. You know, there's sewage in our water based on the climate report Diane Sachs laid out. Are we going to clean that up? And if we are going to clean that up, that's going to cost money. And we don't know what other natural disasters could come our way.
How much of this is attributable to the fact that Ontario has been largely untouched by like very visible natural disasters driven by climate change? You know, you don't have to explain the costs of it to British Columbia because they just lived through it. You don't have to explain it to coastal waters who are facing crazy storms and sea level rise. Ontario seems kind of insulated.
I don't think that it's true that we can escape the effects of climate change anymore. I think they're knocking on our door and we're just not paying attention. Last August in Toronto, we had a really powerful thunderstorm that produced 72 millimeters of rain, and it caused, according to insurance companies, $80 million of loss. We had a tornado in Ottawa that cost millions of dollars. Severe weather is here. As I just mentioned previously, we even had forest fires, and maybe not on the scale that BC did, but we had forest fires, and you can bet your bottom dollar that's going to happen again, and maybe even more severely based on the weather we're having.
When you talk to Diane Sachs and Gord Miller, they're not optimistic about policy in Ontario. How pessimistic are they for the actual future of climate change, for the real world impacts? And when do they think we're going to start really feeling the effects?
I think they're terrified about what happens next.
Right.
And here's why. Diane Sachs was in Paris when the 2030 targets were created. And at that time, Canada was a pariah. You know, everyone was looking at Canada. It's such a big country. It's in the north. It has so many different climate systems, and it wasn't doing anything to protect its environment. But Canada got its, you know, act together and contributed and has been a leader ever since, which is great. But now we're seeing factions of our country move away from that idea because it's going to cost too much, or there's going to be red tape, or something else takes precedence, you know? We have conservative governments in Ontario, Saskatchewan. We might have one in Alberta
Yep.
Depending on what happens in the election.
Likely will, yeah.
Federal election is coming up. We might have a federal conservative government. And all of them are very, very not pro-environment. I keep using that because I don't know if they'll be the first ones to say we're not anti-environment. But
yeah, they're just pro-business.
They're just pro-business. Although Diane Sachs and Gord Miller will be the first to tell you that those two aren't necessarily mutually exclusive.
Of course. But in the short term, you can see why they would act that way. And you can see why the regulation in the United States have been stripped away. Because when you're facing economic challenges, the first thing to go is always regulations that prevent quick money.
But I think that when the world is waking up and saying that no, our future is in danger today and we're not doing anything about it, then why can't Ontario, why can't Saskatchewan, why can't Alberta, why can't Canada also, you know, put aside politics?
How do we move beyond the discussion of policy and take those issues into the real world? In the Nordic countries, it is the people that hold government accountable. Presumably, people will be the ones holding Ford's government accountable.
Although we don't have a watchdog anymore.
Right. But we don't have a watchdog anymore. But there's nothing to stop Diane Sachs from raising her voice. I'm assuming she will. But if it's the people that are going to have to hold the Ford government accountable to this, how can we make a discussion like this resonate on a more visceral level than what the Environment Commissioner usually does?
You know, I've asked that question to everyone that I've interviewed for this story, whether it was Diane Sachs, Gord Miller, or Ruth Greer, who was the NDP MPP who actually, you know, set up the task force that created the Environmental Commissioner's Office, or Bob Rae, who was a premier at that time, or, you know, opposition MPPs. I've even put it to the Minister of Environment, although I haven't gotten a response. And I think the problem is no one knows how to remove politics from the environment. And that's something we got to figure out, and we got to start talking about it. Because the responsibility for the future depends on what is done now. And the people who are in charge of now are, you know, the leaders and the legislator. They have the power to create policies and make decisions. And they have to muster the moral responsibility to address this. They can't just say, well, I won't be in office, you know, 12 years from now, so it's not my problem. It's not my job. It is their job, because at this present and moment in time, they are defining the future, and the future is climate catastrophe, if we believe every report that came out in 2018 that said we have 12 years to act, otherwise we're going to, you know, reach a point of catastrophe that none of us has ever imagined before, or that the world is heating at alarming rates and we have to do something right now to stop it. So we need politicians that have that moral responsibility and that can muster in that. And I don't know whether we change that by our voting preferences or whether we stand up and say, hey, what about the environment every single time they stand up to speak?
Right. Which was the job of the environment.
Which was the job of the environmental commissioner.
Fatima Syed, investigative reporter, National Observer. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. For more from us, thebigstorypodcast.ca, as always, is your destination. You can listen to episodes there, you can contact us with story ideas, or you can do the same thing on social media at Big Story Podcast, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and any podcast app you like. We are there. Please like us, subscribe to us, rate us, review us. We want to know what you think. The Big Story is produced by Claire Broussard, as well as Ryan Clark and Stephanie Phillips. Megan Coley is our associate editor. I am Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thank you for listening. We'll talk on Monday.